Hey gang, I am so excited for this episode. It is my 100th episode of the show, and I have a lot to be excited about. I have interviewed so many incredible people, sharing their stories of self-discovery, showing up so vulnerably, bringing the hard truths alongside the levity that we all need so much, and for allowing me to connect deeply and in ways that I never even knew possible. This show has been incredibly transformative for me, for listeners, and for guests. So if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, please go and do that. Every subscriber helps. The other thing that I'm so stoked about in this being the 100th episode is that I have a guest, a long-awaited guest, that I am thrilled to share with you, and that is my wife, my partner in life, and my partner in business, Nicole. We have an amazing episode, a conversation about what it means and what it looks like to be in a healthy relationship. If you know anything about my story, it has been a long road, and there was a very unhealthy relationship prior to this one. So to be able to come full circle on my 100th episode and share the mic with the person who I hold so dearly in my heart and whom I love more than I could imagine is just an incredible moment for me. And I hope that the conversation hits home for you as well. So if you like what you hear, share it with somebody who you know might like it as well. Subscribe. And in the meantime, let's just get down to business. Conversations with Nick and Nick coming your way.
All right. We are here and we are doing it. We are doing the thing. I'm really excited.
It's been a long time coming.
Yes. I feel like we've talked about having this conversation so many times that the fact that it's actually happening right now is weird.
Yep. Yep. No, we've the amount of times we've gone into conversations where I think, shoot, we should have been recording this.
Right.
People would benefit from hearing this conversation.
Yeah. So today we are talking about healthy relationships, and that was really important for both of us because we each had our fair share of unhealthy relationships, and a big part of what shifted for both of us in finding the right person was our own accountability and like the work that we needed to do to be able to show up fully, be the best version of ourselves, and then also be the right person for someone else. So in the interest of talking about what a healthy relationship looks like, we wanted to share a bit about who we were and how we were in relationships before this one, because I don't think either one of us would have described ourselves as the ideal partner for somebody else, nor would we have felt like somebody necessarily could be that for us. Mm-hmm. So why don't you share a little bit about like how you feel you were in relationships leading up to us meeting.
Totally. I think the key thing to understand for me is that I was dating men most of my adult life. And I approached relationships with a real avoidant attachment style. I knew I was supposed to be wanting to be in a relationship, supposed to be looking forward to dates, and I just didn't. I would dread them. I would have to have friends and my parents tell me, like, you should want this. This is great. It's exciting.
What was it that you weren't excited about?
Giving them my time. And I've had past exes say to me, like, you're really selfish with your time. And I was. I was because I didn't want to give them my time because I knew it wasn't right deep down. But I didn't recognize that because I didn't know what right felt like.
So you just felt like every relationship wasn't really worthy of your time.
Honestly. And it's not. It wasn't coming from a place of ego or like think of arrogance or anything like that. But I just, the inner knowing that it's not right, mm-hmm. but not knowing what right looks like means that you don't know how to identify that it's not right.
I mean, I totally understand that because I think that inner knowing was the thing that kept me really desperate.
Yeah.
And wanting to just, you know, figure out how to be the thing that somebody else needed me to be for them instead of showing up for myself and allowing the relationship to either have what it needed or not. Mm-hmm. And I think that something that we've established in being together for a few years now is that there's a lot more communication involved than we probably ever really had in other relationships also.
Oh, definitely. When you go around, you hear people say communication is the most important thing in a relationship. Mm-hmm. But there's no, I guess there is now with you two, but there's no actually seeing what that means. What does it mean to communicate in a healthy way? You think that you're talking about things, so that's communication, But there's, for me at least, there was so much passive aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
And so much built up resentments. I wasn't expressing my needs. I didn't know how to set boundaries. None of that made any sense to me.
Well, do you think it didn't make sense to you, or do you think that it didn't make sense to I can't say the sentence.
That's okay.
Do you think that it didn't make sense to you, or do you feel like that wasn't even really part of the language that you would have used in a relationship? So how could you possibly have embodied that in a relationship?
I think over time, I started to hear those words, but I didn't really understand what it meant. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't found the therapist that was right for me, so I didn't get to explore that throughout all my 20s until my 30s did I find the right one. And so not knowing how to like go from the therapy perspective of doing the inner work, I wasn't quite there. I was listening to a lot of self-help books. I was listening to a lot of spiritual books, things like that, that were helping me grow on an inner level and in as far as I could without therapy. But there gets to a point where there's only so much that you can do on your own.
Yeah.
You know, and finding a community that's also growing sort of similarly is helpful too. But like therapy was the kicker for me in the actual growth and understanding my own accountability, I was blaming everybody. I blamed everybody else for the things that were going wrong. And I never looked at myself.
Yeah.
I couldn't fathom that I was the problem.
That's interesting. I mean, I can understand that in the sense that I was problematic in my own right. But there were also things that were obviously issues that were a function of the other person and not just the ex that you're familiar with, but in previous dalliances, if you will. I was very magnetically attracted to people who were more avoidant. And that just allowed for my desperation to creep out, and my anxious attachment was so unhealthy that it made me a very insecure version of myself, which was kind of an interesting dynamic because I feel like I had a pretty good first impression for people, mm-hmm. and people would describe me as chill, and then I would be in this relationship and I'd be so wildly insecure that then I show up as the least chill version of myself. Not only am I kind of desperate and like that ick factor sort of reeking off of me, but I also never felt like I had full trust in anyone because I could feel those people pulling away from me. So when you and I first started talking, if you weren't the one that introduced me to attachment styles, it was something that we talked about very early on. And it gave me a lot of insight into how I could reflect on the ways that I behaved with a more objective eye and be able to kind of observe what I was doing wrong. And it's like some people might think, well, it's not about right or wrong. And that's fair. I think that you only know what you know. And the whole idea of know better, do better is extremely important in relationships because I feel like one of the biggest downfalls that a lot of people have, especially if you don't understand each other's attachment styles, is that we just dig our heels in and we like, I am who I am, take it or leave it. I'm not changing. Don't try to change me. And it's like, okay, but maybe we are responsible for changing ourselves so that we can be a better partner.
I think there's a fine line with that. And that's important too, because a really essential part of a relationship is not trying to change the other person, mm-hmm. not dating someone for their potential, like you have mentioned before, yeah. you've done, and dating for them, taking them for who they are, loving them for who they are as they are. But in saying that, you also need to be with someone that you will grow together mm-hmm. in the same way, right? You need to be able to know that you are both sort of heading in the same direction. You both want to do the inner work, do the outer work, whatever, all the things that you're doing. And that's aligned, right? And so if you are constantly being like, I'm not going to change, well, you're not open to growth. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Right.
And I feel like that's something that people use as a defense mechanism because they feel attacked when they don't want to be accountable.
Pure ego.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And then once you realize how actually empowering it is on a personal level to take accountability for stuff.
After the cringe,
you have to take the cringe, but this is your say you're saying.
Yeah, I'd rather be uncomfortable for a little bit in the near term than uncomfortable in perpetuity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if you can acknowledge something that, ooh, I don't want to take that. You know, you're bringing up an issue, something you brought up with me today. You were like, there was an issue, not a big issue, just something that you were like, next time I'd rather us discuss things first before, you know, jumping to a yes on an event. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I jumped to the yes thinking, you know, we would love to entertain more. Mm-hmm. And I just said yes before discussing it with you. And you brought up to me today, I'd like to discuss it before you just jump and volunteer the yes. My old instinct would be to be like defensive, ego. Well, you know, you said this and this and that, and this is your fault for wanting that, for having needs and wants and desires and boundaries. Right? That's all I would know. And then I would probably have gone and bitched to my friend about, she said this and that. Can you believe that she thought that, you know, it's ridiculous. Okay. Now I go, okay, feel the ego there. But it's not useful for me to bring it up and get defensive about it. I was like, you know what? You're right. That's a fair statement. That's a fair statement. And I can do that in the future.
Well, so I appreciate that you said that. And also that this situation happened today. So it could be a point of this discussion, because I feel like it shows that there are those points of discomfort or tension that can arise. And something that we've established is, because we feel so connected and we have such a strong bond, that when there is discomfort or prolonged tension, for sure, it is so uncomfortable. And we both sort of have to fight the urge to respond from like our younger selves and that place of ego, as you said, and also a little bit of trained response, like even just setting up the cameras and getting everything going. It's like the dogs are walking around and I'm getting annoyed and you can see it on my face. And like, we're both sort of anticipating my rage. And if you want to change and you want to become a better version of yourself, you have to sit with the reality of the things that you don't care for or things that you might want to improve, and possibly things that you don't even know that you could and should improve if nobody ever says anything to you about it. I think a lot of people hope that somebody's going to change like on their own will. And it's ultimately, you have to do it on your own will. But I think recognition of the need for the change isn't always immediately apparent to the person who needs to make that change. So sometimes the only way that we really understand that we have to make that shift is for somebody to set a boundary and force us to look at that. What do you think about that?
100%. That's a really good point that you said about not knowing that we could change, not occurring to us. If you're not someone who is inclined to be regularly absorbing, you know, self-development content and like working inner, doing the inner work, it doesn't even occur to you that some of the discomfort or reactions or things that you're feeling in life or expressing in life could be changed.
Right.
That you could consciously, intentionally make the decision to be like, I'm going to show up different.
Right.
Right. Differently.
Yeah.
I'm going to show up differently.
Yeah, it's like we have to be accountable to auditing.
Yeah.
The way that we show up and the way that we behave with people. And something that's so valuable in doing that is that I find that the way that we interact in our relationship, and because we have so much honesty between us and candor, is that it allows me to actually translate those things that I learn in our relationship about myself and the way that I communicate with people into other relationships in my life also. So when we're sitting here and we're talking about a healthy relationship, it's not just, oh, this is me and you and we're partners in life, but I see the benefit of the way that we grow individually in our relationship and together in our relationship as an enhanced benefit to all of the other relationships in my life.
Absolutely. And I would give that to friendships, particularly with my best friend, who I have had several long breakup fights with that have lasted a year or many, many months. And it's my fault for abandoning, right? I'm the one that was like, well, I'm right, you're wrong. Bye. With my best friend, my like sister best friend. And I realize after you've brought to the table, like, here's how you address issues. You were really good about that. I'm still working on being able to come to you with the issues. That's hard for me because of growing up in a passive aggressive, keep it to yourself, let it blow over, and then just start talking again and never talk about it environment.
Yeah.
Right. But you will bring up the issue right away. And so it's like you're modeling that behavior for me. And then so next time a situation came up where there could have been defensiveness on my part, when my friend brought something to me that she was upset about, instead of me reacting, going, well, that's not my fault. That's your fault for being upset. I was like, oh, you're right. I'm so sorry. Immediately, that was my fault. I take it. I feel that I own it. I'm sorry. I won't do it again.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that too, about sort of how you were raised and the passive aggression, sweep it under the rug approach to moving past, because it's not really moving through your emotions. It is the opposite of what I experienced, which was immediate impulsive response. And so while you are very generous to credit me with these parts of your personal growth and helping propel you into them, I also feel really similarly in terms of how you've given space for me to see and reflect on my impulsivity, like how I can be quick to anger and to check myself in those moments. Something that I think is really important is talking about specifically conflict styles and how if I looked at past relationships that I had and I thought about how I showed up, it was like because I was coming from a place of such insecurity, I was a lot more impulsive and erratic in my behavior, because even if I wasn't like raging mad, which is sort of the spectrum of my emotions, is like I'm very low key or I'm like off the rails. And there's a very like finite point here where it's like you just swing the pendulum the totally wrong way. And I would do that in a way that wasn't even like anger sort of rage induced. It was more I was so jealous or so insecure about something that then I would like scream about it. And I'm like, I think about these moments and I'm embarrassed to kind of look back on them and be like, wow, that was just so uncalled for. But if I try to give myself grace in the I didn't know what I didn't know, it's that I was responding purely from like the sensation that I was getting from the insecurity, mm-hmm. and that like I couldn't hold that. So I needed to release it. And I had no way of at the time understanding a healthier way to release it. And getting back to what you said about you have to decide that you're going to do the work. Like I learned through what I would say was like the most off the rails anger that I had. I'd been getting gaslit for a while. So I'm not justifying how ragey I got with my ex, but I feel like it was an aha moment for me to be like, this is not who I am as a person. I don't accept my own behavior. I need to change that. And I went into therapy the next day and I was like, I don't want to get angry like my dad does. And I don't want to discredit my father, who is also a very kind, generous human and who can be very soft in moments. But like, we both have that instinct. And I've given this analogy to you before where it's like somebody's shaking the can of soda. And if you open it right away, anybody in the blast radius is getting slammed. And if you just give it a minute to settle, like, we're cool. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's a little unfortunate that it took me that long in my life to get to that place where I recognized it and did something about it. But I think it's also worth noting that it's possible to look at your old patterns and behaviors, decide that those aren't okay for you. Forget everybody else for a second. I didn't want to treat somebody else that way. And I didn't like how I felt when I left that situation. So how do I create my life in a way that gives space to both honor what I'm experiencing and feeling without projecting that in a way that is so difficult to come back from.
Mm-hmm. I would recognize in myself that my anger, as it were, which is not frequent, it's more frustration that I feel over anger, but it's more like a tea kettle. So it's like, it will be boiling for a long time, but you can't hear it. You don't know it's coming. I don't even know it's coming. And then all of a sudden, and it's like, I've lost it completely and I'm probably crying. I'm not raging, or I might be raging and crying, but like, that's my Pisces showing, of course. But I acknowledge that the times when that happens the most is when I am not recognizing that I need to set boundaries, mm-hmm. or I need to express needs. I'm just trying to maybe essentially people please or keep, because I don't really look at myself as a people pleaser that much, but I do try to sort of that Libra rising or whatever it is, just sort of keep everything balanced. No judgment. Everything's cool. I'm fine.
Avoid conflict.
Avoidant. Like it's that. That's the avoidance in me coming back out. It's not how I like avoided relationships, but avoiding the conflict in them instead of being like, sit with myself. Something's bothering me. Something like you can feel it in your body, but you had to teach me what that even meant. And then address like, what is it? What do I need to say? Throat chakra is blocked. Feeling that all the time. Sensing that physically. What do I need to say to make it so that I'm not going to hit a boiling point where I can't show up for you when you need me the most, which I've been in that situation. And that sucked because I didn't express to you how I was feeling drained because I wasn't giving myself the space. I wasn't setting boundaries mm-hmm. around things that were going on at the time. Yeah. And so I think it's so important that we recognize where our weaknesses are and be able to like sit with ourselves, introspect. The most important thing, and acknowledge what could we do better? How could we do better to show up better for our partners and for ourselves?
Well, yeah. And I think that that's a really good point too, about what that experience is like in acknowledging those, as you referred to them, weaknesses. And weakness is an interesting word. It's something that I find myself trying to be like, it's an opportunity for growth.
For sure.
So rather than sort of the shame that comes along with like, I'm weak for this. It's like, I'm learning this.
I've always said, my basketball coach, she always said, take your weakness and make it your strength. And that stuck with me my whole life. And I don't see a weakness as, it's not a flaw because you have the opportunity to change it. Mm-hmm. The weakness is only a problem if it's something you can't change.
Or you choose not to.
Or you choose not to, which is your own problem, mm-hmm. right?
YP.
It's a YP. So if... it's all about our own choices. Mm-hmm. Do we want to grow? Do we want to show up better for our partners or show up better for ourselves so that we can find the right partners and stop perpetuating the same sort of toxic habits and relationships, the same sort of toxic partners we're attracting and not like acknowledging why? Why am I the common denominator in this situation mm-hmm. where I'm attracting the same type of, you know, manipulative behavior type of person? Or whatever yeah. it may be, right?
When you mentioned trying to make sure that we're not repeating those patterns and toxic cycles in relationships, I was talking in therapy yesterday about how I was so grateful for the way that we communicate about things and that the fact that I'm somebody who has perpetuated historically this anxious attachment and that prior to us meeting, you've said to me that you are very much on the avoidance side of it. My therapist pointed out to me, it's interesting that you are in such a healthy relationship now. And she was witness to a massive chunk of the last one and arguably the most traumatic part of the last one. Like she was the rock, the steady hand that was like there and the only person who really knew all of it. So like, for her to be witness to that and where I am now, I think is just really wonderful for me to have. And I say this because she observed, okay, well, you also are, again, in a relationship with somebody who you would say has an avoidant style and you're obviously you have an anxious style. So sort of asking me, what is it like? Like, have you had moments where you feel like either of you are repeating cycles? And I said, I really don't think so. And I'm curious what your feeling on this is. But for me, I've never felt anxious with you the way that I did with people in the past. And a big part of that was I've never felt insecure about your feelings for me. Something you said very early on when we were talking just as friends for the fleeting moment that it was, even though it felt like ages, was you won't come second to the right person. And you never made me feel like I came second. I've always felt like we chose each other. We saw what there is between us and we both went all in on it. So for me, there wasn't even space for that anxious attachment to come into play. And the only thing that I really see that I'm navigating from sort of my past patterns and is what you're describing here too, is like our conflict styles. But that's less about how I was in relationships in totality and more about like the circumstances that would arise that would cause conflict. So when you think about our relationship and the fact that you've historically had more of an avoidance style, have you ever felt like you were falling into any like old avoidant patterns?
No. And I think one key factor is, you know how divine timing, right? I was, for the first time in my life, exactly in the place that I needed to be ready to have a safe relationship. And I've said this to you before, literally one week before we met to the day, I sat down and I wrote out, because I had been feeling insecure about how I could be a good partner in a relationship. I looked at my friends and I could see all the reasons why they were a good partner, how they showed up. And I saw myself as selfish with my time, avoidant. I'll never be a good partner. I was saying all these negative self-talks. So I sat down 1 week before we met and I wrote down all the qualities that I bring to the table. Instead of all those lists of what I'm looking for, like I'd written many times, these are the kind of people that I'm looking for, and never looking at like, what do I bring to the table? So here's what I brought to the table. And I wrote down every single sort of adjective of what I am as a person and how I can show up in a relationship. And then I posted it to my Instagram story saying, challenge for you guys, do this.
I don't think you ever told me you posted it to your Instagram.
I was like, I'm going to be real vulnerable here. It wasn't just like an inner work exercise. I was like, I'm putting it out there. Because if one other person sees this and goes, I should try that, you know, just to make you feel better. Because I felt better after I did that. I felt more confident. 1 week later, the universe was like, oh, you did the thing we were waiting for. Here you go. Here's your perfect partner. And I was ready. I was ready because I was like, I'm ready to be the perfect partner in a relationship. So I'm ready now for my perfect partner to come. Mm. And not to say that there wasn't still a ton of work I needed to do. I still had to work through my food addiction that I was struggling with. I still needed to work through passive aggressiveness. I still needed to work through a lot of things that I hadn't tackled yet, but I was ready to tackle them for the first time.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I really feel like that relates so much to what you were witness to in my own experience, where the week that we established that our friendship was more than that was me having the realization that the way that I was perpetuating toxicity in relationships and to take accountability for that was to acknowledge that in feeling needed, I felt wanted. And so I would give, and I would lose myself in the process. And so I told you, I was like, I'm making a list of my wants, needs, and deal breakers. And I remember sitting down with the list, and I had sent you like a list of core values that I was kind of using as the baseline by which I wanted to kind of measure what my list would include. And I remember thinking, okay, the list of core values is quite long, but I felt like it was important because it was things that should absolutely be on the list. Integrity, honesty, humility, generosity, humor, etc. When I was making my list of wants, needs, and deal breakers, I'm going to be honest, I think I may have started with a couple of wants and needs, but I leaned heavily into like, these are the deal breakers, immediately knows. And a lot of that was coming out of the relationship that I was in and being like, things I will never tolerate. These are things that I will never allow myself to fall into again, my own habits and other people's, lack of consideration. And then I also feel like it forced me to ask myself what I really wanted, because for the longest time, I felt like the way I showed up in relationships and what I wanted was, I want somebody to love me the way that I love them. That's not a want. That's a desired outcome. And also, the way you love somebody else might not be the way that they love you. And they might not be capable of that kind of love. And so if that's like what you're hinging an entire relationship and the rest of your life on, it's just not realistic. And I feel like it forced me to be like, oh, this is actually what I value in a relationship. This is actually what I want from somebody who's showing up in my life. And this is what I will accept, and this is what I will sort of demand, and not demand in a way that's like, you must do this, but it's more like, I won't settle for less than that.
Yeah. And I think it's important for people to consider, if you are trying to be like, just love me the way I'm showing up great for you, and you're not showing up great for me, well, maybe that person is not the right person for you? Have you discussed like doing the work together? Have you communicated
your needs and your expectations?
Okay. We need to pause here and just discuss this for 1 second. People who sit and bitch about the fact that their needs are not being met in a relationship, that this person is not reading their mind when they have not communicated clearly, no subtle hints, subtle jabs, no, clearly what your expectations are. You haven't done that. You got no ground to stand on. Immediately communicate your needs. And do it kindly.
Yes. And also, if you've talked to your friends about it, but you haven't talked to your partner about it, and you are upset that they haven't changed, you haven't even scratched the surface of what the real issue is.
So much work involved, so much work needed, so much inner work, look inside, figure out why you can't communicate your needs.
Because I was like you. I'm very much similar. Like something would happen in the relationship and I would bitch to everybody else about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would really be inside my own head a lot about it. And I feel like if you're in your head a lot in a relationship, there's something that's wrong. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's not related to the relationship, but if you can sense that it is related to the relationship, like I just constantly felt like, I don't know if this person's right for me. And I was like aggressively trying to shove that square peg in the round hole. And in the process, I was just like eroding all of the things that made me to try to fit what this person, I don't even want to say needed, because I don't know that it's what they needed, but it was what I deemed to be the way that they expected me to show up. And you just waste a lot of time trying to, you know, play the game instead of being honest with yourself and allowing the situation to unfold in whatever way it's going to. Like, we spend a lot of time trying to achieve the desired outcome instead of letting the situation be what it is and maybe just acknowledging that it's not what we had hoped it would be.
I think that's really important because the situation's going to be what it is no matter how hard you try to shove that square peg in the round hole.
Mm-hmm.
It just might take a lot longer and waste a lot more of your time
and energy and like peace. Your inner peace is gone.
And if you could just look objectively, and I think this is what the new generations are getting much better at because they have access to content like this where they can learn about it where we didn't. So we're learning as we go and all we're doing is learning from our immediate peers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like if we can't just objectively look at the relationship and say, here's the things that aren't working. If this was my best friend and I was looking at their relationship and these are the things that are going wrong, what advice would I give to her?
Mm-hmm.
You know? But we have a hard time doing that for ourselves because we're in it. We're emotionally attached. We're trying so hard to make it work. Should never have to try so hard to make it work. It's not working. You're not compatible. The end. If you're confused, you're not compatible. The end. You should never be confused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and something that we were talking about before we sat down was that a lack of compatibility should not be something you deem as a failure in a relationship. In fact, I hope for anybody listening that like you understand that if you are not compatible and you decide to exit a relationship or somebody else decides to end the relationship, that is a gift to you both.
Absolutely.
Holding on, A, for time invested is just not a good reason. I did it. It's just not. Because you don't want to be alone. My mom used to always say to me, she waited to get married because she would have rather been alone for the rest of her life than alone in a marriage. That had been in my head for so long throughout my entire marriage where I felt really alone. And it wasn't until I lost her and was out of that situation that I had the realization of why that just kept sitting and repeating in my head was because I was really alone in that relationship. And it was hard for me to grasp the level of loneliness that I had in that relationship because I've done a good job of surrounding myself with a really strong support system. And I'm so grateful for that because it saved my life. But it also kept me in a place, like my own belief that like I needed to stay there, held me back from living so much of my own life because I was trying to bend it to the belief that I'd created of what the relationship was or could be. instead of looking at it point blank, being like, this is not what I signed up for. This is not what I want. And it doesn't give me what I need. I could have walked away and been like, it's not a failure. I just chose what I needed for me, and that's okay. But I saw it as like, if I leave, people are going to know I made the wrong choice.
Right.
And people including me.
Right.
And that gets back to the accountability. Like, what role did I play in staying in a toxic, abusive relationship? There were plenty of things that happened that I'm not blaming myself for. And I'm not even blaming myself for staying. I'm accountable to the fact that I stayed when something in me knew that it wasn't right. And I feel like a lot of people, we hang on and we're like, it will get better. I believe it will get better. And when people are like, I love you so much, I'm trying so hard. And it's like, you don't just give up on a relationship.
You do if it's not working.
Yeah. And is it giving up or is it releasing?
Releasing.
It's okay to quit. We were told growing up, don't be a quitter.
Like, that was something that was part of our...
Winners never win and winners never quit.
No, you have to quit the things that aren't right for you. You have to understand what is right for you so that you can understand what isn't right for you so that you can quit the things that aren't right for you.
Yeah, and what did Deidre say the other day? Somebody had said to her, she's like, no is a complete sentence.
Love it.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah.
If I don't stand for it, if I don't believe it, if I don't want it for me, no.
I think what's really important is that we need to love ourselves. And this is something that's been so cliche almost now, but absolutely essential to show up in a way that you could have a safe relationship. Safe, loving, to love someone else is to really love yourself first, because that's how you know how to set boundaries. And I think that's what I was struggling with, because coming from a place where I didn't really know myself, let alone know how to love myself well enough to set boundaries, especially coming from a place of like passive aggressive conflict, you know, style.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that too, because I say this very frequently, that I would have previously sort of scoffed, rolled my eyes at the idea of self-love, like that it was jibber jabber, right? Which I think is also very indicative of the generation in which we were raised, being elder millennials, and sort of the perception of things was really a focal point for our parents' generation. You refer to it often as like very much the idea of keeping up with the Joneses. What does everybody else think of me? Not what do I think of myself, and how do I show up being confident in the things that I like about myself, which will allow me to practice and embody and exhibit self-love. And I remember having this moment of realization that I didn't even like myself. And it was kind of shocking to me to be like, I settled for so little because I didn't like myself enough. And here I am seeking all this external validation from other people, wanting to be like me, love me, like, let me be I can love you so well. I can love you so well. Why don't you love me? And it's like, because you don't love yourself, because you are so desperate for somebody else to see in you something that you don't see in yourself, that you are grasping, trying to just like get anybody to see that. And in reality, what I needed to do is actually confront those parts of myself that I was running from, that I was afraid to admit, that I didn't feel comfortable sitting with. And when I started to do that and I realized, oh, there's been this really subtle self-loathing my entire life, it wouldn't have even occurred to me if I wasn't in therapy, walking through some of the things that had been toxic for so much of my life. And once I identified that, it was such a game changer, because I was like, oh my God, like, I didn't even know I didn't like myself. I didn't even know I didn't like myself. I thought I was good. You know, I couldn't say I loved myself, but I thought it was weird to do that anyway. And now it's like, no, I do love myself. I think there are days where I like myself less than others, or things that I do. But the things that we do are not fully who we are. I think we have to, as we've said throughout this conversation, be accountable to those things that we don't like and decide if we're going to change them or not. And when you change them from a place of self-love, from a place of self-respect and ambition to become the best version of yourself, then you start to think so much less about what anybody else believes about you, and focusing more on because you have this strength of character and the ability to love yourself, that there's a magnetism that other people feel, and they're more invited into your life.
Mm-hmm. Because when you show up from a place of not loving yourself, there is an anxiousness or a discomfort you can sense in people's body language and the words they choose to say and how they show up. It could come out as shy, but it also could come out as overly outgoing in a way that isn't natural and authentic.
That's a good point.
You can smell authenticity on people, essentially, not in like an actual scent way, but it's like it reeks off of them, whether they are or not.
Calvin Klein.
My brain was like,
that's funny. There's an idea for them.
Sorry. Yeah.
Open to sponsorships.
But it's true. We were never, ever told to like look inward, to love yourself, to like investigate that, to even think about that. We were only, so what was modeled for us with the sort of keeping up with the Joneses generation was that you need to make sure other people perceive you a certain way. Don't do that or people will think this. Who cares what that stranger thinks of me? Who cares even what those people that I do know but aren't close to think of me? Maybe you do care what the people in your immediate circles think of you. But first and foremost, care what you think of you.
Yeah.
Because you are the only person that you're going to spend your entire life with.
Right.
Well, and I feel like to your point, it's not a disregard for what other people think,
because you and I have talked about not wanting to be perceived as unkind or malicious or something, right? Like, I do care if somebody thinks that, because I'd like to understand why you think that, right? Part of what is challenging in the way that we were raised is that it was this idea of there is a way to do things and there are some things that you just don't do because they're
uncouth.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we both got that word a lot growing up.
It's like, perhaps that's the case, but also who defines that? And so I think there's some extent of, we joke around that there's Gen X and then we're Gen Y. Gen Y, though.
Like, the questioner generation.
Why do we do it? Mm-hmm. Why does it have to be this way? Why is that the only way that it's being done?
That's important. I feel like we were raised to think that there was one way to do things. This is how it's done. And if you do it a different way, it's not the right way. It's weird or it's wrong or it's something like that, you know? But there is any number of ways to go about life and do things. And I just want to touch back on what you said about, you know, not wanting people to perceive us as unkind. My thing is less about them perceiving me that way and more about I don't want to do something that makes them feel like I treated them unkindly. Like, I don't want them to have a feeling like that they were treated with disrespect in a way that made them feel bad. I want to make sure I'm making people feel good about themselves.
Well,
right?
Do you realize the problem with that statement, though?
Tell me.
You can't control how other people feel.
Oh, of course, of course. But I don't want to be the cause of some discomfort if I can help it. You're right, I can't help it if I do, because there's all sorts of things we could say that unintentionally will offend or hurt somebody and not even know, or trigger somebody, right? But just something that is a very obvious statement that you could make that would maybe be perceived as bullying or something. I gave you that example once about being in a bar, and it wasn't even that long ago, maybe like within the last 5 years, where there was this younger guy and I was sort of in a cheeky, just like, mode where I was throwing out witty quips here and there. And he made a statement and I said something kind of offensive, sort of jokingly.
Snarky.
And everybody, there were like 10 people there and they all laughed at him. And I immediately was like, if I was him in this situation, I would feel kind of hurt, kind of embarrassed, kind of offended. And I was sort of walked away and my brain was going, no, you have to go back and apologize. And so I went back to him and I said, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't have said that. That was really rude of me. I didn't mean that. I was just being witty and trying to be funny, and that's on me. Because I couldn't live with myself if I made him feel that way after I've been in his shoes so many times where people have said something that triggered sort of a insecurity in me and made me kind of ruin my night.
How did he respond?
He was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I have no idea if
it even bothered him.
But for me, it would have sat with me and I would have
held on to that. I mean, you're still aware of it. It was sort of an important moment for you.
Yeah.
One, I think to tie it back to the way that we show up in relationships, there is this part of us that we are challenged sometimes by the people that we're in relationships with to understand those triggers more too, to be observant of those things that will encourage us to create boundaries. And when you speak about things that we weren't really taught when we were younger, I mean, we weren't really taught the idea of self-love in a way that was like, here's practically how you sort of learn it and apply it. And I feel like that's the same thing with boundaries. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of like, do as I say, not do as I do, or because I said so. And in some cases, like, I understand why that might be what you need to say. But as a general way of encouraging somebody to develop their personality, it's like, if something makes you uncomfortable, then you don't have to do it. And I think growing up, there were so many things that made me uncomfortable. And it was like, you should have to do it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so I learned self-abandonment at a young age. And I don't want to discredit my parents. You and I both talked about this. We feel we were raised well. We know we were raised by loving parents. They did so much for us. They sacrificed and they gave and they, you know, have been present so much in our lives. So it's not to disregard that or discredit them or say that they were bad parents. It's just that they didn't know what they didn't know. And so they couldn't possibly have taught us the things that we needed to know. Part of what's really challenging as an adult in relationships now and going through the highs and lows of our previous relationships is that we have to acknowledge those gaps in our own growth from when we were younger and be like, oh, how do I smooth that one over and figure out who I am now in the context of what I now understand instead of reverting back to this way that I behave because this is what I experienced and what was modeled to me growing up. And so there is this autonomy that has to be in place to make those decisions and to move forward with a lot of intention about how we show up because we're kind of recovering from these maybe developmental missteps.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we've said before, we both won the boomer parent jackpot,
yeah,
as it were, because we both had a very, you know, safe upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
We never had to feel like our parents didn't love us. We never had to feel like we were abandoned.
They were present. They were very present in our lives.
Yeah. Right? Very involved. They cared. They loved us. They showed it in the way that they showed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I accepted it in the way that they showed it. It was enough for me. Like, I accepted that. I mean, my mom asked me recently, how did you get so deep? Because they, both my parents, aren't super inclined to go very deep on things. I feel like my dad a little bit more because he'll share more about some stories of the past. But, you know, he was basically orphaned, him and his siblings, with losing his parents so young. And so he didn't get a lot of the parental example that he could have needed. And considering, he's done extremely well.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure.
And so I give him a lot of credit for that. I give them both a lot of credit for what they've managed to do.
Your mom also started her life independently pretty young, mm-hmm, as well. And I think when you are responsible for your own emotional maturity at a young age, that is really challenging. I mean, and both of my parents, honestly, too, because if you think about it, it's like the boomer generation, their parents were Depression era.
Yeah.
So there was a much different sense of like what was important and what wasn't. And what's really been interesting for me to witness in terms of how our relationship affects other relationships in my life is that the way that you and I have learned to set boundaries with each other, the way that we've learned to communicate through the discomfort and not just avoid it or be more explosive about it has given me the opportunity to be more of a model to my family as well. Like my dad being the one, because of losing my mom, he's the point of reference I have now. But it's like, because he's the reactive one historically, like more reactive. And I know that I embody that sometimes, that I can see him getting worked up and I'm witness to it. And I'm like, okay, let me relate to you right now. Let me explain to you that I understand how you feel and that I know that you don't really want to be reacting this way. You feel like I can see you physically tensing up and just like, you know, oh, like the anxiety's there. I get it. What if you don't react the way that you are immediately inclined to react? Like, what if we talk about it instead, you know? And it's not, I'm not placating him like this way. I'm oversimplifying it, but it's just being able to sort of have this bird's eye view of an experience where before, I mean, you've also been witness to me telling you that my dad and I were like head to head being like, it's a verbal throwdown, right? Mm-hmm. And so I love being able to show up as this more evolved version of myself and make our relationship better, and in the process help him understand his responses and his reactions more. And that is because you have drawn the line in the sand with me when I go too far, or I'm about to go too far in the way that I express my frustration. And you're like, then I'm not going to be here for it. Like, you can react however you're going to react, but I'm going to exit the situation, and not in a way that's avoidant, but in a way that you're setting a boundary saying, I won't accept it. And now the question is, am I okay with you not accepting it and I'm still just going to do it? Or do I want to respect that you don't accept it and decide that my behavior can change? And it's more beneficial to both of us for me to look at what I've done and how I'm reacting and responding and say, okay, how could I do that differently? And then let's have a conversation about that. And I found that you are much more open to the dialogue after the fact, knowing that sometimes I'm going to escalate and it's not going to be the best version of myself. But I find that like it makes coming back around and having a conversation to hash it out so much less tenuous.
Yes. Because we didn't yell at each other, there was very little yelling growing up. It was, you know, avoidant, door slamming, not talking for 2 weeks type of behavior, and then never talking about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you're inclined to immediately
lash out,
yell, rage, whatever it is. My response to that is to like go into my turtle cocoon and be like, I don't want to be here, right? And so it became the point of like, if that's how you're going to show up, this is how I'm going to show up. So in order for us to have a proper conversation about the issue, we need to separate temporarily until the cooling down process happens, and then we can come and talk more objectively about mm-hmm. it, because there's no use talking about it in the exact moment if there's only going to be fueled emotions.
Right.
It's only going to actually dig deeper into the issue.
It becomes harder to recover from.
For sure. But the most essential part is you do come back.
Yeah.
As soon as you can.
Yeah.
Don't push it off for days. You know, it may need to be the next day if it's something where it's like close to bedtime. But if you can talk about it the same day, that's ideal because it's fresh still.
Yeah.
But you have to wait till the emotions are no longer heightened about it.
I'm curious how you feel about that, given that you mentioned with your best friend having those periods where you basically would say like you weren't friends during those times. Now, I think knowing your friendship, I'm kind of like, I don't know that you ever weren't friends, so to speak, but you were not actively engaging with each other.
My stubbornness outweighed my ability to be a good friend.
Mm.
In those moments.
This is like the point of, because you don't address it right away also, that it's like on principle.
Principle. Get rid of that. That is useless shit. Sorry. Like, we don't need to be holding, yes, you want your values and your principles and your morals, but like, on spite, it's what we're really saying. Out of spite, I'm going to not be accountable and I'm going to continue to blame you, and you can come apologize to me if you want to talk about it. You can start the conversation, or instead of just being uncomfortable forever, you can start the conversation
mm-hmm.
and be like, okay, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
It's difficult to talk about, but we are going to feel better soon.
Yes. I love that. And I feel like you and I operate from that place too. The other thing that helps us is that neither one of us is good at hiding our emotions.
Like, talk about on our sleeve.
Yeah.
Our whole face is like,
yeah, you're like checked out.
Boom.
And I'm like,
this is,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
It's like being witness to the obvious like facial representations of that, but energetically, I feel like you can tell when there's tension. it could be a little bit of a tone or just sort of, you know, first of all, you know, if I'm quiet, something's wrong.
Definitely.
Or I'm thinking about something.
What did I do? Did someone do something to you? Are you frustrated? What are you raging about inwardly?
Yeah.
Should I talk to you right now? Should I leave you alone?
Well, that's a good point. Mm-hmm. I feel like asking what it is that somebody needs in a moment is a really good way to figure out how you can show up. And if you're ready to show up for somebody, asking that question is a great way to break the ice if it's been tense. Because I think sometimes we just assume the other person will come to us.
Mm-hmm.
You're much better at being like, I'm already over it. And I'm like, how can you be over it when I haven't even expressed everything that I'm feeling and then felt guilt about it for days on end?
Because you're a ruminator and I'm not, right? I very seldom have things that I ruminate on. There's been like three things I can think about in my whole life, and one would have been that guy at the bar if I had allowed it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember it, but I don't ruminate because I solved the problem.
Yeah.
But you would think like, I said something and I need to think about the fact that was that perceived a certain way? Was that weird? Did I make them uncomfortable? Over and over and over and over and over. I don't understand that.
Like, I'm literally sitting here being like, meanwhile, I'm like, I have a podcast where I just say things all the time. And I'm like, people are going to think what they're going to think. But if I feel like I'm directly in a moment where I made something weird, I'm like, you know, that Homer Simpson meme where he just goes back in the bush. That's what it's like. I'm like, I loathe everything about myself.
Mine is, yep, I said that. Let's move on. Because... can't unsay it. Toothpaste is out of the tube.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I mean, as we're, you know,
rounding out the conversation,
I like to round it out. We're going to have many more of these conversations.
Of course.
So as we're rounding...
this topic will come up again.
I'm sure. Yes, this topic is a topic that we're passionate about because we really want to help people understand themselves and how we can show up better in relationships for each other. I feel like this has been a very well-rounded conversation. We talked about a lot of things here when it comes to relationship dynamics. But if you were to look at your younger self, who might also be somewhat representative of people who are listening or watching this, what do you think would be an important thing to tell them that will help them get to a place of self-acceptance that will make them better in a relationship?
Few things, probably. Know yourself before you even attempt to try and find your person. Find a date, learn lessons from different personalities that you date,
mm-hmm.
right? That's part of what we're here to learn. But think of dating more as shopping for clothing. You try something on, if it doesn't look good, it's not a fit for you. It doesn't fit. It's not a fit for you. That's fine. You're not going to buy that, right?
Yeah.
Wait until you try on something where you're like, oh my God, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, this is the perfect fit.
And also, don't just buy it because it's on sale.
Oh my God, don't buy it because it's on sale for a relationship. Think about that, okay? It's not a big deal if it's not a fit. With us being in the queer community, we both, even after I was avoidant through all of my straight relationships, became anxious in the queer community because A, I was now 33 years old. I was ready to find my person. I was done dating and I'm recently out. So I just want to like one and done this stuff while I'm on like the queer side of Bumble and all these apps, right? And I dated a couple people and I showed up so anxiously in a way that I didn't even recognize in myself. Who is that? And it's like the scarcity mentality of that.
That's what I was going to say is that it is. It's like yeah. You feel like there aren't options. And I imagine that's probably how anybody who's in probably your, I would say 30s, maybe earlier than that. But and anytime sort of once you feel like you should have that relationship, and you're now like, I don't have it yet. I don't have it yet. I don't have it yet. You're scrambling. And that mindset is like, there's not enough or there never will be the right person. So I should just allow this situation to be what it is and allow that to be enough.
Uh-huh.
Keep your standards high.
Screw contentment. you can decide that that's the life you want, to be content in the relationship, but I choose to be happy. And I would put out to the universe all the time and say, please make sure I'm on my happiest path. I will stop forcing it. I will stop deciding that I need to be married by 28 and I need to, back when I thought I wanted kids, have two kids by the time I'm 32 and all these things. No, life doesn't work that way. Release your timelines, let it go. What's meant to happen in that regard, marriage, kids if you want them, let that be what it's going to be. If you force it, you're not going to be on your happiest path. And I absolutely encourage everybody to try and put out there, please put me on my happiest path, regardless of what your belief system is in terms of like religion and faith and whatnot, but just like put it out there to God or to the universe, however you feel. Please just make sure I'm on my happiest path and then allow it to happen. Stop trying to force things to happen, because the thing that's meant for you will come to you, A, when you have acknowledged the parts of you that are ready and you actually feel ready because you know what you bring to the table, and B, when the person that's for you is also ready, because I became ready a week before, literally a week before you were ready, and it just happened to align. You showed up and was like, I'm just out of this marriage. There's no way I'm ready. And I said, you are literally the most emotionally available person that I have met since coming out, maybe ever. And you were 2 weeks past your separation or wanting a divorce at that point.
I mean, the divorce was wanted for a while. Let's not
confuse like
things.
For sure exit, like out of like for sure exit. So it's like, you never know when the right person's going to come along.
And so setting a timeline is also just unfair to you, because it's putting something, it's restricting things. Like if I had not been open to the fact that my person could be there, because I was like, no, I have to sit in the misery of everything that I've just been through and I need to process it and it's too fast, et cetera, then this wouldn't be happening right now. And I remember a good friend of mine saying, like, it's okay if it happens fast. You and I might have met slash had started talking, but like not anything significant, because we kind of forgot about each other for like a week there. And I remember her saying that and being like, okay, yeah, like I'll keep that in mind. But I didn't see it coming, right? And I do think a lot about how if she hadn't said that, would I have been as open to it? And I don't know if I would have. I think I would have tried to hold myself to an unfair standard and kept myself away from actually being on my happiest path. So I love that you said that. I feel like that's such a great way to close out the conversation and to invite people to explore those parts of yourselves and to come back and join us for more conversations. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that we did this, babe.
I'm glad too. So find a safe feeling of safety. Find your best friend. It's okay. You can have best friends outside of your partner, but feel that sense of friendship. And also have fun.
So much
laugh. Fun. If you can't laugh with them, it's a no.
Yeah,
that's what I say. It's a no immediately.
When I think about what would be at the top of the list, we say this a lot. Find somebody who's your same kind of weird.
Yep.
Somebody who loves you for it, not in spite of it. And if anything, is a little bit like that too. Or a lot like that in our case.
That is the chef's kiss combination.
Yeah, I feel like this will be a fun road to go down and to explore more of these conversations. And I really look forward to diving more into like the essence of safety in a relationship, because that's something that I've just never questioned with you. And I have so much continued gratitude for. And this conversation just being one example of what that feels like and looks like.
For sure. We'll do lots more of these. I had a great time and I look forward to the next one.
Likewise.
Happy 100th episode.
Gang, thank you so much for joining me for the 100th episode of the show. I am so thrilled that you have come on this ride with me and that you've gotten a chance to get to know my partner, Nicole, a bit better. I look forward to all the other conversations that we'll be having. And again, if you like what you hear, please subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Follow me wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes every week. And if you have specific topics that you're interested in hearing about or guests that you want to hear from, feel free to shoot me a message with that. And I really want to put out there to each of you how important it is to me to grow this community. So when I say please reach out, I truly mean it. Your listenership is what keeps this show going. And the passion that you have for the conversations that we're sharing here is just the absolute greatest gift that I could ever ask for. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being part of this community. And I can't wait to share the rest of the next 100 episodes with you.